Hi, I'm Timsy.
And I'm Hazel.
I'm Malawian.
I'm Scottish.
And together in partnership,
we're hosting the People to People podcast.
In Chichewa, it's Antu Kwa Antu.
Just a warning that this episode contains references to sexual violence and child loss. But it's a really important listen.
This is part two of a conversation that we had with Maria Chiponde and Florissa DeLeo Magambi. In part one, they discuss the amazing partnership that they've created together and the exciting point that they're at in handing over the organisation. That was actually a kind of unexpected bonus, to be honest. When we first contacted them, it was really to talk about the refugee situation in Malawi. That's what we discuss in this episode, but just to recap where we got to in the conversation. Here's Maria explaining about Kabebe, which is the organisation that Florissa is currently handing over to Maria.
In a nutshell, Kabebe is a social enterprise. We're registered here in Malawi. We work with refugee and Malawian tailors to handcraft ethical and unique, also eco-inclusive products for both the local as well as the international market. The other portion of our mission is to basically create a positive narrative about refugees in Malawi and, you know, what they have to offer.
I'd love to hear a bit more about the refugee communities that you work with. What's their situation and how did you get involved with working with them in the first place?
We have deep roots in the refugee community because my husband, Innocent, was a refugee himself for the first 27 years of life. He was actually born in a refugee camp in the Congo by Burundian parents who had been displaced by the conflict. And when he was 17, the war broke out in Congo. So he became displaced himself and went to Tanzania, Zambia, and then Malawi. So he lived in Zaleka refugee camp. And I came as a volunteer to Malawi in 2004 in a very disorganized way in my early 20s. Like, basically, I didn't have a clue, you know, but and that's something that's for another podcast, like how not to be a volunteer. I can teach people how not to.
I think we have that one lined up, actually. We're hoping. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot that can be unpacked on this topic. But yeah, we met in 2004 when I visited refugee camp and I was with the pastor of my church in Lilongwe at the time, and then that church ended up sponsoring Innocent for a degree in theology. That he was 27 years old for the first time, not living in a camp, but living in the midst of society. And so he felt really compelled to set up programs that would help and reach out back to his people. And Innocent brings a unique perspective because he has lived the experience. So then, a year into our marriage, Innocent and I had our first child, and her name was Mwiza. She was born with a very rare and complex malformation of the brain of the face, which is called holoprosencephaly. She wasn't diagnosed in the womb, and so it was a very big crisis moment that put into question whether we could even continue to live in Malawi. She needed surgeries that were complex, and so that was difficult. But Innocent and I have always been missionaries or volunteers and relying on people's financial support. I had started making some greeting cards by purchasing plain recycled paper cards made in Dedza, and then going to the Chitenje market and purchasing the fabrics and gluing it on the front as well as on the flap of the envelope, trying to sell them to friends and family to just raise a bit of money. And then I didn't even have time for that when Mwiza was born because life was very complex. And so as well as having become, through the experience of having Mwiza, very much sensitive and aware of what it means to have a disability in the family. And then if you combine that with being displaced and combine that with being in poverty, I suddenly felt like I wanted to support the refugees with disabilities. And so I handed over that first project of the greeting cards to a group that already existed in the camp. It was a support group for people with disabilities or parents of disabled children. Yeah, we started meeting up, and I started not only teaching them the very simple technique that I used to make the cards, but we had a lot of fun because I was sharing with them about Valentine's Day or occasions where you would give someone a card. They found it quite far-fetched to think that you would give someone a card instead of something practical or useful, a bag of sugar or something that to them had a lot more value. What was really funny is that years later, in 2019, so about 10 years after that, I had a huge privilege of being knighted by the Italian president. The ambassador of Italy came to the refugee camp and we had a whole event. And so the artisans as a group, they gifted me this box. It was very light. And then I opened the box and inside was one single card, you know, saying congratulations or whatever. And it kind of made me smile and brought me back to the time where we were trying to envision them. Why would you give someone a card? And maybe I didn't quite nail it because obviously you don't put it in a box like it accompanies a gift, but I must have missed that part out.
For people who don't know, and this is probably very ignorant of me because I also don't know what the refugee situation in Malawi is like, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the refugee situation in Malawi is driven by the refugee policy that the country holds. Malawi is a signatory to the 1951 Geneva Convention on Refugees because obviously Malawi is part of the United Nations. However, at the time of signing, they took, I believe, 9 reservations, which means the small print that excuses Malawi from adhering to all that the Charter on the Treatment of Refugees stipulates. So one of the exceptions that Malawi makes is that it does not allow refugees to live outside of the confines of the refugee camp. So there's no freedom of movement legally for refugees. Secondly, there's no freedom of employment. So refugees are excluded from legally working in Malawi, taking up either a paid job or setting up something like a business. This is, we're talking about the legal framework. And Chimzi, you may have seen that it's quite the opposite in a lot of villages, towns, and cities. You have the corner shops, which in Malawi, they're often referred to as Maburundi shop. That has been outside of the law, which then means that you have to befriend a member of the local police and a member of the immigration and support them with their family financial needs so that you can survive as a shop owner and they can satisfy the requirements of their lives and their job. Also, again, according to the law, there is an exclusion from being able to attend public education institutions. So if you're a refugee and you're in secondary school in Zaleka and you excel in your Malawi secondary school education certificate, you cannot be invited to go to a public university as a Malawian would have, because you're not a Malawian. So if you then want to attend that university, you need to pay as if you were an international student, which is obviously, you know, not affordable. There are other reservations to do with being able to purchase land and own property in Malawi. So that's also not allowed. And children, this is a massive point. And when I say indefinite encampment, what I mean is that not only it affects the person that has come to Malawi seeking asylum and has been granted what we call refugee status, it continues to affect their children and their grandchildren and all the following generations. This is also true of a refugee marrying a Malawian. During the 2023 month of May forced re-encampment of refugees, families in cities and towns where one member of the family was a refugee were asked to return to the camp, leave their spouse, Malawian spouse, in town, take the children and return to the camp because they have no right to integrate and settle outside of that confinement.
That kind of sounds quite hard to hear. I can just imagine the lives of these people. And so in terms of policy, like, what are we campaigning for and how does that work?
Lovely question. So in 2016 and in 2019, respectively, the government of Malawi pledged at the UNHCR Global Forum in Geneva and at the UN meeting in New York that they would review their national policy on refugees, steering it towards integration. Those were formal pledges, and there is the transcript of it on headed paper available, you know, for supporting evidence. Nothing has yet happened. And quite the contrary, as I mentioned before, in May 2023, there was a huge operation, which in Chichewa was officially named Chotsa Maburundi, get rid of Maburundi, Maburundi being the nickname, you know, the derogatory, I would say, nickname for the refugees, because it puts everybody of all the nationalities under one. And this operation involved the Malawi Defense Force, involved the Malawi police, and resulted in people being raped, beaten, robbed, taken to Mawula prison, which is the principal prison in Lilongwe, until the staff from the immigration went and checked people's papers. And then those who had papers and perhaps they'd been picked up because they were mistaken as refugees, they were released and they had to find their own way home, having endured everything that they did. And those who are refugees or asylum seekers were moved to Dzaleka refugee camp, where they were abandoned in communal tents that had initially been set up during COVID, with highly insufficient spaces to go to the toilet, being on the ground. I mean, just inhumane. So for the sake of respecting the law, there's been a complete disrespect of human rights. And the Malawi Human Rights Commission conducted a study of Dzaleka refugee camp when the government had announced that they wanted to forcibly re-encamp people that lived in town. And Malawi Human Rights Commission, which is a government body, said the camp is already extremely over-congested, already access to basic human rights is at risk for the people that live there. You cannot possibly bring in more people. But the government ignored those recommendations. So I would love for, I don't know who speaks from the Scottish government to the Malawi government, to hold the Malawi government accountable, first of all, on the pledges that it made in 2016 and in 2019. And secondly, the West would rather that refugees didn't come on their territory. But how can refugees not flee when conditions are such? So there are instruments, political instruments, such as economic advantages being offered to countries that maybe integrate refugees. The UN had put this on the table, and that's why there was a pledge, because there was going to be a support from the UN to create infrastructure like better schools and hospitals in towns and cities that would absorb refugees. So there was going to be a trade-off. I can go on for hours on this, but lastly, just to say that towards the end of last year, the UNHCR gave money to Malawi to conduct a review of the refugee policy. So the Malawi Law Commission has been tasked to carry out a review of the policy. We are awaiting the results. That's great. Accountability is key. Otherwise, the lives of people are going to continue, you know, to really have no worth in the way that they, yeah, the way that people are forced to live.
Yeah, I really didn't know any of this, which is really sad because I'm Malawian and I feel like that is something I should know.
For the longest time, there was the misconception that refugees receive cash and food. And so at the moment, a refugee should, on, if there's money enough, if there's funding, they receive $5 per month per person to buy food, soap, clothes, medicines, and everything. And some months there isn't money, and so they don't receive it. There needs to be a voice that is heard that explains the facts. And my husband runs, it's called Inua Advocacy, so it's an advocacy organization for refugee rights. But he is himself a foreigner. People then suspect, of course you're saying this because you're not Malawian, so you don't have the interests of the country at heart.
This makes me really sad. But I think I'd like to know what like local Malawians' attitudes are towards the refugees. I would like to think welcoming, because I think in general Malawians are very welcoming people. I think there's always a sense of umuntu, humanity, when it comes to Malawian people. So I would like to think that is extended to the people in the refugee camps.
It'd be wonderful to bring you in, Maria, here, just to hear about your perspective as a Malawian and any observations that you've had.
I'm Malawian. My observations have been that as a country, we prioritize a select few causes that feed into their interests. You know, when we talk about, you know, refugee issues, again, there's also the women issues that already Malawi has had to struggle with for a very long time. Yeah. We're talking about, you know, gender-based violence and everything. And even that as an issue on its own, it doesn't receive the amount of support that it needs to. And yet we all know that it's bad. It's like, you know, it's not like it's debatable, right? They kind of build up into this, like, I guess, circle, a bunch up of those issues that nobody really wants to focus or prioritize on. Grassroots organizations like Kibebe or There Is Hope and any other, I guess, create then the platform for such issues to actually be voiced out, so that they stop just being a second thought, really, that they come to light and become, they start to become a priority.
I'll post a link to the Kibebe website on the show note. You can buy their products or make a donation to the welfare initiatives, which help provide lunch and emergency medical care to the artisans. I'll also post a link to Inua Advocacy, which is an amazing organisation that advocates for refugees in Malawi. So please do connect with that organisation as well. Many thanks to Florissa De Leo Magambe and Maria Chiponde for their time recording this episode. This podcast is supported by the Scotland-Malawi Partnership, but the views represented are those of the speakers. So your responses to the themes in this episode are very welcome, and we do hope that this podcast provokes some respectful conversation on important issues. Please do get in touch.
Please join us on our Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Email us at peopletopeoplepod@gmail.com.
Please do share this episode with your friends. That's how people find us and our listeners can grow.
It was produced and presented by Hazel Darwin Clements and me, Chimsy Dory, and was supported by the Scotland-Malawi Partnership.
In the next episode, we're speaking with Tracy Morse and Effie Chipetta about their research collaboration. They talk to us about their partnership, which works with girls and mental health, and that's a great listen. Really interesting women. Join us for that.